I attended Sunday services in a beautiful Singapore Lutheran congregation. One local man approached me and asked with a pronounced Southeast Asian accent, "You live in St. Louis? You know Todd Wilkin?"
Pastor Matt Harrison reading from his new audiobook, Christ Have Mercy, How to Put Your Faith in Action.
Who? You mean Todd Wilkin? It turned out this man, half a world away, was a regular listener via the internet, and he's hardly alone. It really is a whole new day. We are witnessing the greatest free flow of faithfully Lutheran information in the history of the Lutheran Church. It is the worldwide moment for confessional Lutheranism. It is Missouri's moment.
You can download Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison at cph.org. It costs only $10.99 to download. This new audiobook is a must-listen for Issues Etc. fans. Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison, cph.org. You might say, look, I understand why the church would remember the big ones, Peter, Paul, John, the disciples that everybody remembers, or the significant people in the life and ministry of Jesus Christ, why we would remember these saints, or some Old Testament ones, the big names back there, Moses, Abraham. Simon and Jude, I mean, I dare say that you couldn't show me in the Bible where they are. And you might well ask, why would the church bother to remember them on a day like this? And yet the church does, and we're going to find out who they were and why the church sees fit to remember Saints Simon and Jude. Pastor Bill Swirla joins us for the next half hour of the program. He's a regular guest, pastor of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California, co-host of a weekly internet radio show called The God Whisperers, and president of the Lutheran youth organization called Higher Things. Bill, welcome back.
Good to be back, Todd. Blessed feast of Saints Simon and Jude.
They get a whole feast, and I can't, I mean, not off the top of my head, could I point to where, without a concordance, where they are in the Bible? I'm guessing New Testament. Why would the church remember them?
Yeah, they're about as obscure as Bartholomew, you know, but when it comes to the 12 apostles, we've got Peter and Andrew, James and John. We've got those guys down cold, you know. But once you get past those four, it gets kind of thin. Oh, Matthew the tax collector, everybody knows about him. But when you get down to the tail end, they usually come in last or near last, like numbers 10 and 11. In the listing are Simon and Jude, or Judas or Judah. It's all the same name. You see variations on that. Who are they? Well, they're numbers 10 and 11, right before Judas, who betrayed him, in the listing of the original 12, the 12 disciples whom Jesus designated as apostles and sent, and as we understand, is the sort of the foundation of the office of the holy ministry. Mentioned by the synoptic writers, Matthew and Mark refer to Thaddeus and Simon, so we have to assume that Thaddeus is another name for Jude, Judah, Judas, not Iscariot. And Luke, both in Acts and in Luke 6, mentions Simon and Jude or Judas. So we were going to assume here that Judas and Thaddeus are the same person.
I mean, part of the problem we're dealing with here is Simon also is a name by which St. Peter went. So I can see how people get confused when everybody's got at least two names. Some of them have nicknames tossed in there. And then you're trying to sort them out of the 12 disciples of Jesus.
Well, and to make things just a little stickier, in Matthew 13, the relatives of Jesus, and I'm just going to leave that word adelphoi, you know, commonly translated brothers of the Lord, I'm just going to leave it a little looser and just say the relatives of Jesus are named James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas also, leading some people, at least, to think that these are the quote-unquote brothers of Jesus, of the Lord, which would make this Jude or this Judas the same as the author of the book of Jude. And you see that, let's see, where was that? That's in Jude's Lives of the Saints, published in 1950. He's picking up some older tradition there. I don't think it washes, though, because John reports that his brothers didn't believe in him. So it would not be consistent to have these guys be the same as the original, among the original 12 apostles. But they'll talk about name overlap. It's like everybody's got the same name here.
It's like an Italian family. I mean,
Well, and then you have some other interesting things about them, too, and then we'll kind of get on to what little we know of them. Simon is referred to by Luke in both Acts and the Gospel as Simon the Zelotes, the zealot. In Matthew and Mark, he's referred to as Thaddeus the Canaanian, or excuse me, as Simon the Canaanian, Simon the Canaanian. The Canaanian is the Aramaic equivalent for zelotes, for zealot. And there's kind of a question as to what exactly this entails. Later, getting around towards 70, 66 to 70 in the Jewish wars, there was a zealot party or a zealot group that came up, which are basically political terrorists. Looking on basically getting rid of the Roman occupation of Israel. And they led quite a revolt, killing nobility, filling the temple with blood. Josephus reports this. However, that group didn't come into existence or was not in existence at the time of Jesus. So it's probably, Simon is probably not a member of, you know, a terrorist organization. Probably safer just to say Simon the Patriot. That he was likely zealous for the liberation of Israel, or something, and had leanings in those directions. But it certainly, I think, speaks to at least his politics, or his maybe even more his messianic expectations.
Do either of these guys get any lines? I mean, in the narrative that is the gospel,
any
the four gospels.
Parts?
Yeah, any speaking parts?
None from Simon. Judas, you know, how would you like to be the one that's Judas, not Iscariot? You know,
you change your name.
As an aside, this is why in the Roman tradition he's considered the patron saint of hopeless cases, because nobody would consider seeking his intercession. You know, who wants to be talking to Judas, even though it's not Iscariot? So the whole idea was only the desperate who are at their last resources would seek his intercession. So he's the patron saint of desperate cases. I'm thinking of taking him up for myself. He's my man. John 14, in the upper room, it's this Judas who says, when Jesus says that he's going away, but he's not, and he will manifest himself to his disciples by the Spirit whom he sends. And it's Judas who gets the speaking line question, how will you then manifest yourself to us and not the world? And Jesus goes on to speak of, you know, if you keep my mandates and blah, 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 which I think, you know, the hidden answer in that, just as an aside, is the Lord's Supper. This is, you know, it's the upper room and the whole thing. So this is how he's going to manifest himself to his church and not to the world, and that is by way of word and sacrament. But it's Judas, this Judas, not Iscariot, who gets to ask that leading question that draws Jesus' answer. By the way, one other piece of background before we go anywhere else with regard to Judas, not Iscariot, is that he's designated in Acts the son of James. As I said, Matthew and Mark call him Thaddeus. In Luke calls him Judas, although if you look at the Greek text, it doesn't say son of James, it just says of James. And so some write son of James, some write brother of James. If you buy into the idea that these are the relatives of Jesus, then that Simon and Judas are brothers. But it's just a designation. It's probably son of James to further designate him as not being Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him.
So even the gospel writers are kind of aware of the fact that they've got the potential for some misidentification here.
Well, I think Matthew and Mark both just avoid it by calling him Thaddeus. As you say, they have a bunch of names, so you know, pick another one. and Luke, for whatever his reasons, Luke retains his name Judas, but says he is the one of James. And that could just be a relative of James, could be a son of James, but it's clearly to designate him from the other Judas.
I don't want to open a can of worms here or get too far off track, but I do, I mean, someone is obviously listening and wondering, why do you want to keep perhaps it ambiguous as to whether or not, and perhaps leaning toward excluding these guys from the circle of what the gospel writers call the relatives of the brothers of our Lord?
Well, why? I didn't quite understand your question.
Well, it was terribly put, I mean, in the first place, but so I'll rephrase. Why do you seem to be leaning against these being half-brothers of Jesus?
What, Simon and Jude?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't care who the I'm not as concerned about the four named guys in Matthew 13, along with the girls too. You know, there's the so-called sisters. I just don't think it's possible that our Simon and Jude of today's commemoration are those guys, the four relatives, the ad alfoi of Jesus, only because John himself says that in John 7, I believe, he says that his own brothers did not believe in him. The question, though, is what does it mean by brothers? Are they half-brothers, that is, family members brought in via Joseph? You know, there's all kinds of old traditions about this. Are they cousins, you know, relatives of Jesus? And you know, in that sense, the Greek word is adelphoi, which is simply brothers, but that's a lot looser. And that opens, you're right, I mean, it opens up a much bigger discussion, the big discussion, of course, being did Mary and Joseph have other kids after Jesus? And are these them? And you know, the old tradition says no, and kind of retains that. And it kind of makes sense because when Jesus is dying on the cross, he entrusts Mary, his mother, to John. You know, if there had been a sort of second brother, he would have been it.
All right. Well, let's take a break here, and when we come back, does tradition tell us anything about life for Simon and Jude subsequent to Christ's ascension into heaven? And we'll talk a bit about a word that Pastor Shorley used early on in our conversation, and that is feast. I mean, most of the time when we think feast, we think about sitting down for Thanksgiving or something along those lines. And let the church has its feasts, and these feasts are of a different nature than the everyday ordinary feasts in which we engage. We'll talk about feasts and saints' days, along with Simon and Jude. On the other side of the break, Pastor Bill Swirla, pastor of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California, is our guest.
The new Issues Etc. YouTube video features Benny Hinn.
Adam was a super being, that he had dominion over the fowls of the air, the fish of the sea, which means he used to fly. Adam not only flew, he flew to space. With one thought, he'd be on the moon.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play.
Joel Osteen.
You may have to weed through 100 negative thoughts before you come to the right sound. The voice of victory that's saying, you are blessed, you are prosperous, you can do all things, your best days are still ahead. Latch on to those thoughts.
Never heard the word impossible this time. There's no...
And Deepak Chopra.
How come you're all so convinced that God is a he and Satan is a he? How come we have these ideas that are so mythical, that are so primitive?
Check out the new Issues Etc. YouTube video at issuesetc.org and click support.
Grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's what Pastor Bill Swirla had to say on a recent Issues Etc. broadcast about the new Lutheran Study Bible.
What we've had in the past is the Lutheran revision of an NIV Study Bible, so there's always a certain yes-but character to it. This is done by Lutheran theologians and exegetes, and I think it's something that we can use confidently in our Bible studies and home devotions and other places.
You can purchase the new Lutheran Study Bible online. Just look for the cover at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click Promote and publicize your congregation to the world.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd. Welcome. Pastor Bill Swirla is our guest. We're talking about Saints Simon and Jude on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 28th. 10 more minutes left in this hour of the program. In the second hour, Gretchen Pasentino will join us to talk about Halloween. Should Christians just avoid it altogether? Or is there a way to, I don't know, partake in all the festivities such as they are without engaging in what is tantamount, some Christians would contend, to devil worship? Dr. Gene Edward Veith will be our guest a little bit later to talk about homeschooling. Bill, you used the term early in our conversation, Feast of St. Simon and Jude. What does the word feast mean when the church uses it in this way?
Well, it's kind of a general catch-all phrase for really it's referring, of course, to the service that recognizes them. I'm not sure actually whether feast is probably the right word or not. I think Bill Whedon could probably. It might just be a commemoration, but we generally refer to, like, you know, the Feast of the Nativity, the Feast of the Ascension, and it's really saying that the church gathers to celebrate these things, and of course, in gathering, celebrates the Lord's Supper. But it's the theme for that particular gathering, and so today, pretty much universally is recognized as the day to commemorate Saints Simon and Jude.
So what does the church do when we have so little actual biblical material to go on with guys like this?
Well, you know, there are traditions. In fact, Simon has a lot of traditions attached to him. In the East, they say that he died in Edessa in Mesopotamia. In the West has more details. It's said that he preached in Egypt, and then along with Jude, went to Mesopotamia and finally to Persia. And Jude also has a tradition that dovetails with that, joining with Simon, he went to Persia, where together they were martyred. Very deep into the early centuries of Christianity, these two apostles are linked together all the time, perhaps in their martyrdom. It's one of the things about the book of Acts that we only know the activity of a few of the apostles. Luke pretty much keeps them confined to Jerusalem. And, you know, the second half of the book of Acts is all about Paul, who's not one of the original 12. And so we really don't have much to go on. We don't have anything to go on in the New Testament in terms of what these guys did subsequently to the activities recorded in Acts. And so there's every indication, if these traditions have any validity in history, that Simon and Jude took the gospel to places like to Egypt or to Persia and suffered martyrdom, as you know, all but John did. What does the church do with it? You know, I tell you what I would do with it in terms of preaching or devotion is I think these two are really good examples of what I would call the non-celebrity apostles. And in our age, where everybody's got to be a celebrity in order to get notice. And, you know, you have to have a TV show or you have to have a recognizable book or something like that. We have no clue as to what these guys actually did. We have a few stories that have been circulating. But really what they've done and their work is known only to the Lord. And isn't that really what most, apostolic pastoral work is about? It's hidden. It goes on subversively, undercover, without the world noticing, taking note of, you know, the great accomplishments. We have no idea how many converts they had, how many churches they planted. They left no statistics behind, none of this stuff that we're occupied with. They just simply, presumably, were faithful to the end. And in many ways, we honor them on account of the office rather than the person. And I think that's really cool because that, in the end, is what it's about. It's about the office of Christ and not about the particular men, their politics, whatever, you know. And I also think there's a nice little side note with Simon the Zealot. Here was a guy who was really devoted to the nation Israel, probably had a mistaken notion about Jesus when he started following him, probably thought he was going to be some kind of political Messiah, and came to see differently, you know, came to see Jesus as the Savior from sin and death and the resurrection, and preached that Messiah for the rest of his days. So it's the anonymity and the non-celebrity that kind of get me about these two guys.
And to someone who says, look, to observe these days might in fact be innocuous, but isn't it just a carryover from medieval Roman Catholicism? Isn't it something that the Reformation should have purged from the church's midst along with the other abuses that were found before that?
Yeah, you know, you think like that, and then you turn to in our current hymnal, LSB, to hymn 517 and 518, where you have 28 stanzas of all these names, you know, names like Matthew, Luke, James, John the Baptist, Mary Magdalene, and the last one, this is verse number 28, St. Simon and St. Jude, apostles. And you know, to me, it's like a hall of fame. It's like the great. It's a few names in the great cloud of witnesses that Hebrews talks about. And you know, we have this in baseball, we have this in rock and roll, we have this in all kinds of things where we have kind of a listing of the greats and the people who are at the foundational level of this and are honored simply because they were there. And that's Simon and Jude. They were among the first. They were among the 12 who walked with the Lord for 3 years, eyewitnesses of him in his resurrection, and witnesses to him in their death. And so it's a little bit. These are minor figures in the Hall of Fame, and we really dishonor our history. We don't embrace our history when we just ignore the fact that there were some real guys named Simon and Jude who almost anonymously were apostles of the Lord.
Do you think that the church does well to kind of add to the role, so to speak? And that is because some people will make a distinction between biblical saints that are remembered by the church, Old and New Testament, and others that came subsequent to the apostolic era.
Well, I think there's value in doing that. It's kind of really a both and. I think it's good to call to mind the biblical names. How many people can actually recite the original 12 apostles? Like I said, we got Peter, Andrew, James, John down, and Matthew the tax collector. But beyond that, you know, we just forget about these guys. And these guys, of the hundreds that followed Jesus, these were the ones that the Lord specifically selected to be sent in his name to function in his stead, and to sort of set a pattern for apostolic ministry to follow. And okay, do we have time for me to read the hymn stanza?
Yeah, please do.
It's a great one. It's a hymn of praise. Praise Lord for your apostles, Saint Simon and Saint Jude. One love, one hope impelled them to tread the way renewed. May we with zeal as earnest the faith of Christ maintain, be bound in love together in life eternal gain. I like what the writer did here, taking Simon the Zealot and turning his zeal for the liberation of Israel into a zeal for the heavenly Jerusalem, you know, the zeal for salvation and the zeal to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ. And perhaps that was kind of the way of Simon, that all that enthusiasm and zeal and focus that was his political activity became an activity for the kingdom of God.
Bill, before we let you go, you're president of a tremendous youth organization called Higher Things. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we're gearing up for next year's conferences. The theme of the conference is Given. Nice gospel theme. We're going to look at what we are given and what that being given to entails and what it means for us. Two conferences, one in Logan, Utah, at Utah State University, June 29th through July 2nd, and then in Memphis, Tennessee, at the University of Memphis, July 6th through the 9th. So we're kind of bookending the 4th of July time there. And you can find out more information about that on our website at higherthings.org.
Folks, we'll also post a link to Higher Things under the on-demand page of our website tonight, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Hey, Bill, before I let you go, how does it feel to be featured as one of the app pastors in the latest Issues Etc. video that one of our fans put together? There's a pastor for that.
I just looked at that the other night and instantly sent the link to about a dozen friends of mine. That's one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time. Embarrassing but funny. Nice to know you've got a pastor for that.
Yeah, I just wish my iTouch really did that. I could get a swirl on there. That would be kind of handy sometimes.
That really, I had a good laugh, and I was asking Jeff, who did that? I do need to email him and just, I don't know, thank him might be the wrong word, but acknowledge his creativity.
Pastor Bill Swirla, pastor of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California, co-host of a weekly internet radio show called The God Whisperers, and president of the youth organization called Higher Things. Bill, thank you.
Peace.
When we come back from this break, hour two of Issues Etc. is straight ahead. We're going to start out with Gretchen Passantino talking about Halloween. Of course, the kids will be trick-or-treating. There are going to be parties. There are going to be candy. Look, little ghosts hanging from the trees, maybe a jack-o'-lantern or two, a little witch flying through the branches of the trees as well. And it's all over and done with in one night, harmless. And yet some Christians say not harmless at all. Maybe harmless, you know, if all you're doing is eating candy, but it's the devil's work, they say. Is that true? And they'll say it has its pagan roots and Christians should have none of it. We'll talk about Halloween, where it came from, and what Christians should do with it today, if anything, with Gretchen Passantino of Answers in Action on the other side of this break. Then later in that second hour of the program, we'll talk homeschooling with Dr. Jean Edward Veith, Provost and Professor of Literature at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia. Our call-in number for the second hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or email us on Halloween or homeschooling, talkback@issuesetc.org.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.